But yeah, our warehouse for a good couple of years was from a shed to then, was the lounge, and then eventually my housemate, yeah, won the socks in the lounge even. It's a bit awkward, and people came around and there's thousands of socks everywhere. And you haven't
really, bit of a talking point.
Yeah, well, especially when you haven't, I always forget because I'm used to them. You know, you bring people around and then you eventually have to go after like 5 minutes going, do you like socks?
Have you got some kind of a compulsive purchasing disorder around socks?
Yeah, it's just crazy. There's mannequins, different colours, boxes, and then this ironing board kind of in the middle of the room, which I use to pick and pack.
Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Hi, episode number 48, Gavin here. Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast. Josh Turner of Stand for Socks and about to launch a brand new brand is our guest this week. Now, Josh was an award winner in the Great British Entrepreneur Awards of 2015. And it all started from a question out on a social night out with some friends. What if you could change the world with socks? And from starting off in the garden shed at home, through to now serving corporate customers and consumers, but corporate customers such as Google, Burberry and Nando's, and also helping the homeless with their buy one, give one philosophy. Josh shares his journey of, you know, literally starting in the garden shed through to growth and the story about launching a second and complementary brand. So straight into our interview now with Josh Turner of Stand for Socks.
Hello and welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast. I've got the great pleasure of having Josh Turner, Josh from Stand for Socks. He and I met a number of years ago when I did some mentoring with NatWest's entrepreneurial Spark, eSpark incubator for startups. Josh, welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast.
Great to have me. Thanks a lot.
Josh has been a super trooper today. He's got a bit of a cold, a bit of man flu, so his dulcet tones will be all the more croaky. Josh, introduce yourself, but also importantly, share about Stand for Socks, you know, your bit of background on your journey and what your mission with your brand is.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, hopefully my voice will hold out, a bit of man flu at the moment. But yes, I'm Josh Turner, the founder of Stand for Socks. Started back in 2015 from a crazy comment of imagine if socks could change the world over a beer amongst friends, and sort of three or four beers later that became a lot better idea. But yeah, kind of this mission of, you know, socks were boring and dull. Sort of like inspired by businesses like Tom's and the Livestrong sort of rubber wristbands of, you know, products being able to do more than, you know, just retail, but, you know, definitely kind of more angled as a business for good than a charity. And yeah, sort of started out with UN Global Goals and then moved a lot more into homelessness, and I'm sure we'll come on to, but yeah, every pair of socks we sell stands for a different cause, and we support different causes around the world for a sort of a buy one, give one model, mostly focused on direct consumer online, but also a bit of B2B as well now.
Excellent. So how long have you been going?
I always never know. So 2015, we launched, but there was a solid year when I was running the business, building websites and everything else, but didn't have a, you know, sock manufacturer. So yeah, probably even 5 years now, but yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
So share with us, I remember the early days of kind of startup then. I remember you telling me a story, and this, I think, showed me some photos of a spare room in a shared flat you were with, a shared apartment you were with some mates, and it was just full of boxes of socks, and there was an ironing board in the middle. And so tell that story about what it was like in the early days of, you know, starting up a brand new business.
Yeah, that famous ironing board. So yeah, I mean, when I started the business, it's probably the usual. I'd been in a corporate job and sort of assumed it would be quite easy. Sort of started out quite quickly, you know, not in a bad way, but ended up on benefits. You know, kind of the money I'd saved to start the business kind of ran out pretty quickly. So I moved back home and was kind of working from my mum's shed initially. I was allowed in the house, but I kind of based myself out in the sort of summer house shed and was kind of crazy guy talking about changing the world with socks and didn't have any socks or any idea really what I was doing, but, you know, telling everyone I was doing that. So kind of very committed to making it work. And then, you know, slowly kind of built it up a little bit and was able to kind of move out and moved up to Manchester. And yeah, obviously, you know, with everything, couldn't afford to pay someone to design the socks. So I designed them, couldn't afford someone to build the website. So I kind of had to learn that. And I, you know, looking back now, it's kind of my biggest strengths. I was able to use YouTube and online and leverage, you know, to be able to learn stuff rather than, you know, always paying money out for these things, because I kind of understand how it all works now. But yeah, our warehouse for a good couple of years was from a shed to then, was the lounge, and then eventually my housemate, yeah, wanted the socks in the lounge. Even it's a bit awkward, and people came around and there's thousands of socks everywhere, and you haven't really,
a bit of a talking point.
Yeah, well, especially when you haven't, I always forget because I'm used to them. You know, you bring people around and then they eventually have to go after like 5 minutes going, do you like socks?
Have you got some kind of a compulsive purchasing disorder around socks?
Yeah, it's just crazy. There's mannequins, different colours, boxes, and then this ironing board kind of in the middle of the room, which I used to pick and pack. And, you know, we did had the Franking machine, and I was packing every order, and, you know, it wasn't an awful lot of orders back then, you know, two or three a day if we were lucky up until Christmas. And then, you know, putting them in a bin liner, I didn't even have the mail bags, and would then walk down, it was in Manchester, and, you know, walk down to the post office and queue up with your ticket to post them. And, you know, in my mind it was a highly scalable growth business, but, you know, a couple of hours a day was spent, you know, in the liner, Royal Mail, and packing up orders. But yeah, I had a whole wall of, you know, socks. And then eventually we, you know, a few times in the business, we eventually put, you know, made the plunge of stepping up to probably something we can't really afford yet. But, you know, as soon as we've made that step change, it's you know, really paid off quickly. So moving into fulfillment was an expensive decision, but massively allowed us to scale and gave us a lot more time to put it that way.
So you outsourced the fulfillment to a specialist fulfillment house?
Yeah. Third party fulfillment now. And it allows us just to, I never have to worry. It's all automated. You know, orders go straight through, and it's all quite smooth. But also allows us to offer more services and take on the discounts of all the big carriers. And, you know, we have 11 PM cut off for like Hermes, and we have, you know, Sunday pickup. So it actually allows us to be a lot more efficient, and barcodes and inventory managing. Because the amount of time me and the girlfriend back then were having to suspend Sundays counting all the socks, because after, you know, 3 or 4 weeks we just got out of sync with how much stock and inventory we had, whereas, you know, third party fulfillment, we have that in a click. So yeah, so many advantages.
Yeah, an investment, but actually gives you the capacity to scale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and also then you're focusing your attention on the things that are really going to, you know, leveraging your time on and spending your time on the things that are going to make the biggest difference to the business in terms of your skill sets. You know, not great leverage of your time queuing up at the post office with your bin bag of full of socks. So, how did your week, your working week or your working day shift then as soon as you brought fulfillment on board? What did that enable you to do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, say probably 2 to 3 hours, which I didn't kind of really realize, because, you know, when obviously starting a business up and you're kind of doing everything and you're not paying yourself, you don't value your own time. And I, you know, look at a lot of businesses now that we try and help mentor and try and avoid people making the mistakes I probably made and move very slowly in the early days. But, you know, you don't value your time. You always need to put at least a value on it and think, if I paid somebody else to do this, you know, how much is it worth? And look at the kind of commercial side of it, because, yeah, you're doing 10, 12 hours for something that should be taking a few hours, and, you know, you're not earning anything. It's not a commercial business. So yeah, I think when I kind of then could use those 2 or 3 hours to focus on others. And also I think it put more pressure on the business, because, you know, in fulfillment we have certain, you know, it works with pricing tiers, and the more volume you're doing, obviously the cheaper it gets. So it pushed us to go, right, we now need actually more volume. So it really stepped up our marketing. We started investing a lot more in digital marketing and for actual marketing rather than, you know, just the blogs and the, you know, the organic and everything else from PR we used to be doing, which then, you know, kind of paid for itself. But it was, again, a 3 or 4 month period when we had a bit of reserves build up, and we were like, look, we need to invest this in digital marketing. We need to really kind of aggressively push the business to almost breaking point, to then see is this commercially viable? And luckily it kind of grew sort of 600%.
So you're talking B2C at this stage. So this was your digital marketing, presumably on the social media platforms such as Instagram and Facebook, then to actually build a following of consumers.
Yeah, and kind of getting really super targeted with it. So we had an international intern at the time who kind of was doing digital marketing, and he sort of was our first sort of test into it, and running lots of ad tests in different demographics, and, you know, just £5-10 tests to see where we were seeing I say a bite, but you know, improving our content and just kind of seeing where the interest is, and then we moved to a small outsourced again, but a small digital marketing agency here in Manchester who are actually in the same co-working space as us, and you know, they are kind of say experts, but they know far more than what I know, and they've got lots of clients in this space, because I think that space just moves so quickly. I looked at it as, should we hire someone in this, you know, space, or should we, you know, outsource it? And Again, that was definitely a good decision to outsource, because that expertise across, you know, different sized businesses across different countries was massive, and been again a good decision to for our growth.
It changes by the month, if not more frequently. It's a very fast moving space, and the good thing though that you've done the testing in house, just like you've tested so many elements of your business, is that you are now an educated customer. There's many of my clients who've lamented that the thousands they've spent on external digital marketing agencies and hadn't seen a return. And yet there are some standout stories of some digital marketing agencies that really have kept, you know, up to date, and they're getting great results. And they would not have achieved those results internally with the level of expertise and time to be as current if they tried to do it in-house. So, yeah, you being an educated customer is a big part of it.
Yeah, and we've just got such a good relationship with them now. It's been over 18 months. We have a weekly meeting, and, you know, from knowing not a lot about that space, I feel I know loads about it now that, you know, we could bring it in-house, but obviously the time and everything at the moment. But, you know, yeah, we did our homework. We've got a great team that, you know, small, young, growing business that also wants to kind of grow with us. And and it's just been really great, to be honest. They really have changed the business. But, you know, I hear they say a lot of horror stories where people have just happily take the money and as percentage of ad spend and everything else, and expect you to do a lot of the copywriting and all that. Whereas, yeah, our guys have kind of really invested in our mission as well.
Just to probe a little bit deeper, in terms of what specifically were you testing on? What were you looking for as an indication that an ad was successful?
Yeah.
So that people can understand that.
Yeah, I think the hard thing, I think as a founder or any, you know, person in running a business, it's marketing's always that, you know, I quite believe in marketing, but a lot of people are like, right, I'll give you, I always say to them, you know, I'll give you as much money as you want, as long as you give me more money back, you know, so your budget.
Yes.
Is it £1,000 a week, £10,000 or £100,000 a week, you know, as long as you bring me more money, I don't mind. And, you know.
It's, yeah, of course.
So, you know, we're always wanting that return on ad spend to be above one, but it's easier said than done. I think one thing that we look at is, you know, we had it early on, you know, a couple of Christmases where maybe we're spending sort of £500 a week and we were getting, you know, £1,000 back, so two times return ad spend. And I was sort of saying to them, well, I'd actually rather you spend £1,000 and brought me £1,100, because obviously as our market and our product of socks, it's all about repeat purchase. So actually the more customers we can acquire, and then gain, you know, repeat purchases along the way. So yeah, it's return on ad spend is kind of our key metric. Most of the agencies would look at click-through rates, because that's at the end of the day what they're responsible for bringing people to your website. You know, they don't convert on the website because your checkout page is clunky or your products are out of stock and you haven't updated it. That's not on their fault. But obviously I'm looking at, yeah, that pure return on ad spend, how much we've spent, how much we've brought in on a weekly basis, which is hard for them, and I do fully understand why it is, but that's at the end of the day all I care about. You know, the more money we keep spending in it, then as long as we're bringing more back and we're acquiring new customers, then, you know, we look at the repeat purchase and everything else. But yeah, but you know, there's a lot of side factors as well. We've, you know, gone up lots in likes, we've gained a lot more awareness, we've had, you know, say B2B and press inquiries from people that have seen us in ads. So there's a lot of secondary things that you aren't probably measuring that have come from it, and collaborations and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, which platforms are you finding are most effective for your ads?
It changes. I mean, different times of year. I think Facebook is still a key one for us. it's kind of all layered. I think Instagram's really good, what we call for attention or first impression. So getting someone to engage with the brand, probably bring them to the website, getting them to engage to a post, and then we'd probably retarget them again on Facebook for a conversion, maybe on desktop. I mean, we do obviously have a lot of conversions through mobile, but often it's not through first impression. It's two or three engagements until a conversion. Google, we're still struggling with Google. It's kind of a lot of these platforms, it's a pay to play. So the more money you're putting into Google, obviously the more you're gonna see a return. But it's hard for us. You know, you've got a higher intent to purchase, obviously, from Google than you do on Facebook, but it's a lot more expensive and competitive. And for our, you know, brand like us, where we're looking at, you know, weekly, you know, positive return on ad spend, it's almost harder for us to invest in that. We're obviously looking at SEO and investing in places like that now. But yeah, you've got to look at it as a broad spectrum. I think we've, you know, started with some platforms, and you know, now we're looking at, you know, influencers a lot more, and we're looking at PR on a lot bigger scale than we had before. So we've kind of, it's been step changing. You know, Facebook, I think, was our first, and then we've stepped that up to, you know, multiple platforms, and then some of the big search engines, and now into other places, and a lot of collaborations as well, and with some of the, you know, kind of so discount apps and, you know, partnerships like that, where you can bring in. And then actually the biggest thing this year has been email marketing, and you know, moving on from the kind of MailChimp, where a lot of people start, through to some of the smart email platforms, where you're not emailing everybody the exact same message when you email and a lot of people with.
And which is your favorite platform on that?
Using Drip at the moment. It's kind of one of the newer platforms, but I kind of quite like the functionality. It's got a lot of flow maps and stuff of, yeah, if someone bought this sock, and if they haven't purchased in 3 months, then we send them this email. And if they have, you know, it's kind of, it's like mind maps. You can do it really smart and so granular, almost, yeah.
And of course, what you're doing there is you're maximizing lifetime customer value, aren't you? You've got your upfront cost that, you know, customer acquisition. As you said, you can spend £1,000 if you're going to get £1,100 back, because you're going to make your money on the upsells or the returning customers.
Yeah, that's the thing. And we, you know, we put a lot of time into our technology and the quality of our socks. So that product is first. And, you know, we then, you know, average person in the UK buys 12 pairs of socks a year. They probably don't buy 12 pairs of like ours. But yeah, we've kind of really got to look at that lifetime and go, right, sports and occasions of gifting versus for yourself and throughout the year. And yeah, so we've got some amazing customers now, 4 years in, that have been buying since, you know, not day one, but quite early on, and are still buying now. Yeah. And we're still seeing completely different demographics come in based on different designs and stuff.
Great. Any plans to introduce a subscription, you know, a pair of socks every month?
Yeah, we've kind of, such an odd, actually it's a good question to ask. It's been asked for a lot of times, especially at like Christmas. People will say, you know, I normally buy a subscription for my husband from X company. Why don't you guys do one? And so we kind of did it 1 year as an Excel spreadsheet, really clunky, we'll just manually kind of do it to get understand it. And then we use some software to do it. It's quite funny now, you know, today we have basically 29 people on subscription, but it's nowhere to be seen on our website. You can't find it. It's basically because it's not fully automated with our warehouse. It's still quite a manual process in the back end for us. We haven't scaled it yet. And it's one of the things we want to do for this Christmas. But we've kind of built it. They found us through Google, I think. So they've pretty much been searching probably ethical socks on subscription or socks supporting homeless on subscription. They've probably been very detailed description. They found it, the landing page, and they've signed up. So no, we've got the appetite, and it sounds crazy to kind of say that we've got, that people have randomly found it and signed up, and we haven't pushed it more. But for
just
us,
imagine if you put it front and center and scale it, because the one thing I've talked about the importance of monthly recurring revenue in recent podcasts, but it changes the valuation principle fundamentally. Instead of it being the appropriate industry multiple times by EBITDA, you know, earnings before revenue, interest, tax and depreciation and amortization, so, you know, net profit, effectively operating profit, earnings, operating profit times by your industry multiple, it becomes your industry multiple times by your turnover, by your revenue. So it fundamentally shifts your business valuation. Particularly if, you know, majority of your business is monthly recurring revenue, because it reduces the risk from the point of view of any investor. So,
yeah, no,
where clients of mine have got an opportunity for a subscription model, I'm really keen to introduce one because of that. Not only does it provide you certainty of cash flows or a higher degree of certainty of cash flows, but it also transforms the valuation of your business.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, yeah, we definitely want to get to that. And the one thing we're strong with at the moment is the kind of value proposition of ours, because as a brand, we've got quite broad. We weren't too strict in the early days. We've got, you know, very fun and colourful designs, very corporate ones, very kind of sports ones. So when someone signs up and if it's a random pair every month, we kind of really need to understand what those customers actually want. And so what we're looking at is actually changing it to basically you'd get a selection of 5 socks a month, and obviously the new early access to new designs, but you basically select which one you want of the 5, and if you don't select, then you automatically get one of the 5. But, you know, you can change the size of the sock, you can change the design each month, so people want to give it as a gift this month rather than for themselves. But yeah, no, 100%, it's a big focus for us going forward, and with our new brand as well.
So on that, along that journey, your major focus, sorry, your initial focus was direct to consumer, was B2C, but dealing with corporates, B2B became a new avenue that opened up for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came about and also how that's progressing for Stand for Socks?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, I mean, initially, to be honest, we actually thought more of a retail model. So we thought, yeah, we'll have an e-commerce element, because, you know, it was back in 2014, 2015. And we thought, you know, that's big, obviously, but we'd still need to be in the big department stores and be maybe opening up small pop-up stores. So yeah, we kind of, the e-commerce wasn't a big, it was there, but it wasn't a big focus. It then became a bigger focus. We did a lot of sort of pop-up markets, actually, about 2 years in, just sort of the artisan craft markets.
Okay.
More actually, because we needed money, we needed to sell some socks. But yes, actually, it was one of the best things we did, because we got, it's the first time from trying to push online to actually get that face-to-face interaction. And, you know, back then we were supporting a lot of UN global goals, and we had every sock designed to a different cause. And it was kind of the first time that I could go, people going, I really want to support this cause, but I actually really like this design. And we were like, oh, we've got a fundamental issue with our model that you don't have that flexibility. And it was happening over and over again. So we kind of got that insight. And obviously, you know, yes, we did the markets to kind of bring in revenue to actually keep the business alive, but actually it gave us so much customer feedback directly that actually really helped us change online. So that was key. And yeah, we did go down retail for a bit. We did a bit, loads of the big trade shows, spent loads and loads of money. Absolutely waste of time, to be honest. You know, our ethically made socks cost us quite a bit more. We obviously donate one, so we couldn't compete with what shops and stores expected to buy socks for. They had kind of, it was quite a set price. And so we had basically no margin. We'd make 10-20p a pair, and they'd order 50-100 pairs a year. And it was kind of like, this really doesn't make sense, and we're spending thousands of pounds on shows and expensive stands to be there. So we kind of stopped that model. We do a bit of wholesale, but it's kind of when stores come directly to us and they've got a bit of a story. They're a small independent ethical store or coffee shop, and they actually really get our brand, and they're coming to us rather than us going to them. So that was interesting learning. But yeah, so then, you know, as we've kind of grown and scaled B2C, that B2B's kind of come to us, and it was such an odd thing. I think, you know, some of our first ones, I think Burberry was one of our first customers that just kind of got in touch and was like, we want to buy, you know, 50 pairs of socks for this special meeting we've got. And we were kind of going, you're a fashion brand, you know, why do you want to buy socks from another fashion brand?
Didn't
really kind of understand it. And so, and we happened, you know, it's happened with Lloyds Bank and a few others. We're just kind of, and the kind of social enterprise business for good space were kind of just buying from us, you know, either getting in touch with us or just actually suddenly get a big order on the website of a couple of hundred pairs. We'll be like, oh, what's just happened? And why is, you know, you can see the person's name, what company they're at. And we're like, what's just happened here? And you know, look them up on LinkedIn. But so that was kind of happening for about a year. And so then we kind of created this B2B kind of landing page where it was just a quite quick, you know, type form survey. And it was kind of like an inquiry for wholesale/custom socks, because we hadn't done custom socks by that point, but we thought maybe there's something here. We'd done some custom inserts for some companies. And it's always so funny, the first company that filled out that form, it was about a couple of days later, was Nando's, who, you know, in my mind was not a company that we would ever, you know, if we made a list of the top 100 companies we need to go and talk to about custom socks, you know, no offense to Nando's, I didn't think that that would be something for them.
Right,
but, you know, I had a long chat. It was actually the CSR manager there.
Yeah.
I had a long chat, a phone call with him, and he was saying, no, actually, Nando's, we do, you know, quite a lot for CSR. We just don't broadcast it probably as much as other companies. And so they, yeah, had a big meeting with all their managers, a big conference, and they wanted socks everywhere. And then 2 weeks later, they then had a big one with all their suppliers, and they then were like, actually, want another order of socks. So it kind of, we were like, ah, and because that was not of it. We didn't, and even today now, we're still struggling with the value proposition there. We have, you know, it in one company, so, you know, some of our clients at the moment are sort of Facebook and Accenture and lots of the kind of big brands people would know, but we also have lots of SMEs that I've never heard of sort of B2B companies who are doing big trade shows or big stuff for their staff, don't have long procurement process like the big corporates, which we've been navigating. But they're, you know, just kind of coming, and it's, and every, not everyone, but majority, there's probably been 20 different propositions that have come to us with, you know, we've got, we want custom socks for our top clients this Christmas. We want to put them in a gift box and a hamper. And then it's like, we've got this, it's our 20th anniversary, we want socks for all of our staff. Or we've got this big B2B conference in Amsterdam and we want a different sock for every day of the conference, a different color to keep people to keep going back to our stand, and they're kind of collectible. And it's all been different. I mean, they've all obviously brought into our ethics and our buy one, give one model. I think that's, you know, up there. But you know, we've changed our B2B page recently, but we kind of say sock it to brand depends. We kind of say that, you know, we've an understanding what customers want, but you know, that, you know, every kind of company does branded notebooks, branded pens, branded mouse mats, it used to be, or mugs, you know, the usual things. And we're saying, you know, custom socks are a better thing. You know, obviously the socks that we're doing are a lot higher quality than, you know, kind of a screen print cheap one. And you know, we don't, you know, shy away from that with the kind of graphics and custom packaging we do. But it's kind of, yeah, people want something different. And we say, you know, the branded, your sock drawer at home compared to your pen drawer is, you know, full of branded pens from all different companies and different reasons over the years, but your sock drawer is kind of untouched. And so for a brand, you know, like Google or someone to get a great athletic sports sock in someone's sock drawer, rather than a branded cupcake or bottle of wine or something that's going to be disposable, it's kind of actually a massive kind of return on investment and, you know, emotional connection for that brand to have. You know, obviously not all brands can have that in the same sort of way, you know, different brands. But yeah, it's kind of, it's where we're, you know, everyone at the end of the day does need socks, as much as we say.
Absolutely,
it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a growing trend of people liking, you know, bright, colourful, different socks.
So you're seeing a product extension now into like sports socks, trainer socks, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we do in Stamper socks anyway. We do quite broadly. We do kids socks now as well. Our new brand, you know, is we're launching in a couple of weeks, is going kind of very much into performance and comfort and the direct consumer space, because to be honest, Stamper socks has seen so much growth in kind of B2B and more quirky and fun designs. We kind of need, there's two ends of the market when you really look at the sock market for that.
Right.
So we're launching from our data insights, a new brand in that space. But yeah, no, massively, you know, we've got a great supply chain again that we've built up over the years, and trust there that we can kind of do anything in terms of socks, you know, from bamboo through to kind of cotton or merino wool. And yeah, we've kind of really leveraging our supply chain now to where the market needs and growth are seeing. Yeah.
So talk about the new brand and when's it due to launch?
The new brand's called Strides.
Strides.
So yeah. It's kind of a positive step forward, like a stride, and ease is because it's plural, like socks. It's focused on socks, but kind of open to going into underwear and a few other areas, hopefully in the future as well. But it's kind of all about comfort. You know, we wear socks for 16 hours a day. You know, the one of the very few items you start and end your day with. But you know, if you're running a marathon or something, you do all your research and spend lots of money on your proper trainers, or you buy your great shoes to wear out with your mates, you know, you're stylish, what the latest trends are, but people kind of ignore the socks, and we're going, well, you know, socks are with you and all this kind of other steps, you know, of your life, and whether you're in work or in the gym or socializing. So we've basically taken our knowledge from 5 years in socks and our amazing supply chain and basically made a number of feature improvements, which we're currently getting protection on. But across the board of socks, we basically make, you know, the most comfortable socks possible, without sacrificing style and ethics. And you know, we still have our do good. Every pair of socks we sell is donating one as well. At the moment, to homeless, but in the future, hopefully, homelessness will be less of an issue as today, and we can donate into other causes as well. And yeah, we're excited. I mean, definitely in the, even more so in the direct to consumer e-commerce space. We've got a few, I can't talk about them. We've got a few B2B collaborations we're working on at the moment as well for the launch of it. So Right. Yeah, it's really, really exciting time. Really worrying because, you know, I'm quite aware that we're launching a new brand that's very similar to our current brand, but the reasons, there's a lot of reasons behind it, but the current brand is kind of actually going in a slightly different direction, and so actually when the new brand launches, it gives frees it up to kind of really push on in that direction. So I think it'll be quite similar when they first launch, but hopefully in 6 months time they'll see the differences quite clearly.
Fantastic. And talk a little bit about the work that you are doing with the homeless.
Yeah, so when we started, you know, with the UN Global Goals, it was you know, what if stuff's changed the world? Great kind of statement to make. It's like saying, you know, what if you could drink water and be cured of every disease? You know, it's a great idea, but how do you actually do that in practice? And so we kind of started with the UN Global Goals. In 2015, when we launched, there was 8 of them. We had a SOC for each one and the tangible impact on all of them, from eradicating extreme poverty to clean water and hunger. And then the UN, which we kind of knew we were going to do, but they took it up to 17 earlier than we thought in September that we launched. And it's 17 from 2015 to 2030 to include even more causes, which is, well, great, but unfortunately is important. So yeah, we kind of got up to sort of 12 of those. And then, you know, we were feeling kind of, I'll say feeling great, but, you know, good that we were doing something for our business model across the world, in clearing landmines in Vietnam, to vaccinated kids against measles in Bangladesh, or planting trees, and all these other, you know, microloans in South America and all this other stuff. And it was kind of great, but we kind of were like, we're a business, we're not a charity, and we were kind of, from a comms point of view, having some issues that people really trying to understand what we do and what we stand for, because we're supporting so many different broad causes in very little ways. And we were kind of, you know, realized, you know, being based here in Manchester in the UK, that we were kind of ignoring, you know, people closest to home. We'd always kind of been donating old lines or socks to homeless shelters just naturally. And we eventually started to realize that socks were actually one of the most requested items by homeless shelters, which again, you know, as it's all about my bedroom at the start, you know, thousands of socks. I was like, you know, I didn't really kind of understand that need. Or, you know, as we grew up in the UK, we've always got lots of socks. It's that kind of gift you get at Christmas when you prefer to have toys, you know, from your auntie and that. So yeah, it kind of takes socks for granted. But, you know, if you stop and think about it, you know, no one ever kind of wouldn't donate your old holy socks. You know, it's a wear through item. You kind of wear them so they get holes in or mismatch and you throw them away. You wouldn't donate them to a homeless person. But obviously, if you're homeless on the street, you know, you walk in more than the average person, and you don't have the luxury of fresh, clean socks, and it basically leads to a number of very serious foot health issues, from trench foot and various other things, just from something, you know, you'll kind of take for granted of good quality socks. So yeah, when we kind of started to, we launched one sock one Christmas that was every pair of socks we sell, we would donate one to homeless. I actually hated the design. It was one of our most boring. It was a gray one, and I like kind of our fun and colorful one. But it kind of took off, and I was like, right, well, it might have just been that it was a boring design and we've got all fun ones. And so then we, you know, we launched into some more colorful designs, and it kind of, you know, we're seeing 5 times return, 5 times increase on sales, and it just resonated. You know, people say you buy a pair of socks and you give a pair. It's none of this, well, how much is going to the charity and what percentage of revenue?
Just really simple.
Really simple. And it kind of took off. So now, yeah, today it's about 85% of our range. And it is kind of, you know, what, you know, we're really passionate about.
And is that just homeless shelters in and around Greater Manchester, or is it nationwide?
No, nationwide. We try to do it close to where our customers are. With, you know, the B2C, that's quite spread across the UK. We have all size shapes, sizes and shapes of homeless shelters, from the kind of one man bands going out doing soup kitchens to your big kind of nationwide shelters in the cities. Because homelessness is such a complicated issue, you know, 80% of homelessness is invisible. So we've kind of trying to acknowledge that it's not all rough sleepers. We've kind of got 2 different types of socks. We've got the thick antibacterial kind of hiking sock for your rough sleeping community, and then we've got kind of a more of a bamboo breathable sock for someone going for a job interview, or somebody going to food banks who's also, you know, is homeless. So we've kind of had to really kind of understand and learn about that problem more. And, you know, we're looking at more things in the future with our supply chain, say it's our fulfillment, and what jobs can we create there, and what jobs can we create in the kind of digital economy of graphic design and ad spend
for
homeless, yeah, apprenticeships.
Phenomenal.
We kind of want to get to, we call them short-term apprenticeships, in terms of, it sounds mean, but we can bring people in, teach them, you know, basics to graphic design, and create jobs in that kind of new economy.
Amazing.
That aren't, you know, your warehouse jobs.
And of course that helps to address that, you know, catch-22, or that chicken and egg. In order to get the job, you need experience, but you can't. Get a job unless you need experience to get a job, but you can't get a job unless you've got experience, and you're giving them that experience, which is a crucial step in the right direction.
Yeah, no, massively. And it kind of, we always say it's the win-win-win situations, or it just makes sense. You know, in our business, we are spending money in these areas, and we're kind of going, right, our impact is on purchase at the moment, which is great, and, you know, ethically made and everything else, which is for us, you know, common sense. But we're looking at, yeah, well, we spend X amount of money here, or we do have a big problem or revenue flowing here, and as we grow, that's only going to hopefully get bigger. So we're going, well, where else can we have more social impact throughout our business? say easier said than done, but you know, we say the more established you get and the partners, you know, the trust we build up with our partners, that we're able to kind of have these conversations, go, look, this is fundamentally what we want to get to and how can you help us achieve that? Because you know, you can't do everything on your own, obviously. You do need the expertise.
Great, phenomenal. What have been two big lessons that you've learned on the journey so far, Josh?
It's probably a contradiction to what I've just said. One is simplicity, I think. In simplifying it, you know, I made the mistake, you know, kind of entrepreneurial, dyslexic kind of growing up, struggled with school and very entrepreneurial growing up, always sort of seeing a problem and trying to find the solution to it. And I think, you know, you think about business in the school and university setting, it's like USPs and how do you be different? So, you know, when I was starting out multiple businesses, I'd always look at the big competitors and go, right, they're good at X, Y, Z. So they don't do this and they don't do that. Well, let's do these things and that's how we're different. Or let's take two or three different businesses. You know, like, I mean, you look at Happy Socks, look at Stamper Socks. It basically was Happy Socks and Tom's Shoes put together. So two very successful businesses in their own right. And we just like, well, let's merge them together. You know, this buy one, give one and this fun, colorful designs. And surely that's a good idea. And it's like, no, it's not. it doesn't kind of work like that. So I think, yeah, the biggest kind of growth and scale we've seen is the more simple we've made our model and the more simple we've made the business is actually the, you know, and you know, we've taken on an employee recently and we've had interns in and out before and different partners. And, you know, although I can understand our complicated model because I've been there on a 4-year journey to get to those points, when new people come in, they, you know, almost get a little bit frustrated. They don't really kind of understand it. And, you know, you've got to think, if you want to grow and scale a business, it needs to be really simple that different people can come in and you're all on the same page. You understand what the mission is, what you're trying to achieve and how your business model works. And so simplifying, it's really, really helped us. That would probably be our main one. And then I think the second one will kind of be, and it's a hard one because I've made the mistakes, it's the kind of these step changes. So for us, it was, you know, stepping up to fulfillment and us stepping up digital marketing. And in most cases, those decisions have kind of been the right one. And you know, most recently hiring someone, I put that off for a long while. I, you know, still don't really pay myself in the business because we're focused on growth and scaling it. But you know, then we've hired someone and I'm going, actually, for the cost it's costing us per month, the actual value we're getting, we would say we had intern stuff before, but they kind of come in and get up to speed and then they obviously leave and it's, you're back to square one again. You're spending a lot of time training people and teaching them about, you know, e-commerce or what we do. So, you know, there's been three or four definitely big stages of growth that we've made, and we've made those steps probably a little bit too late, but at the same time, as soon as we've made them, it's, yeah, the first 1 or 2 months is a little bit like, oh, there's a lot of money going out and is the model still working? But it really stepped up the growth of the business. You know, we're still pre-investment as a business. We're still fully bootstrapped and lean, which is good to be, definitely, you know, that and learning as much as you can. I would say my co-founder's YouTube, you know, the amount we've learned from YouTube videos and online and just asking people for help or grabbing a coffee with someone, you know, learn so much because it helps now as we're growing quite aggressively. We can go, actually, well, I know how to do all these different levers and what different parts of the business, but it has also taken 4 years. So it's taken a lot of time to get to that point.
And I think you'll probably see with some of the stuff that you got in the pipeline, the new launch, et cetera, that you and the growing demand from corporates and some of the sort of corporate joint venture type things that you alluded to earlier on, I think you're going to see an ever increasing gradient on that growth curve, which is exciting. Josh, share the URLs, one for Stanford Socks, and then what will be the new URL for Stand Easy.
Yeah, so Stand for Socks, www.standforsocks.com. That's a number 4 in the middle. And the new brand, which hopefully should be up in busy week this week on the website, but hopefully be up in the next couple of weeks, is strideys.com.
Strideys.
Yeah. And then at Strideys on social media and at
Stand for Socks. How do you spell that? S-T?
Oh, you're asking the dyslexic.
S-T-R-I-D-I-E-S? Strideys?
That's the one, yep.
Strideys.com.
Yeah. Strideys.com and then at Stand for Socks across social.
Fantastic. And if anybody wants to follow you personally, do you have your own sort of personal Instagram and LinkedIn page?
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the rest. It's at and then number two, J Turner. It's at 2 J Turner. It's my old American football number, the 2, but stuck with.
Fantastic. Josh, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real privilege catching up with you after a couple of years, and I'm delighted to hear about the ongoing successful growth of soon to be 2 brands, which is very exciting.
Very exciting, very scary. But no, thanks for having me, and great to be on.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success and create more impact.